You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome in to just another sports podcast here on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. It is Thanksgiving Eve, if you will, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host from Lasker, North Carolina, the head coach at Northeast Academy, the one and only Mr. Stevie Floss. Stevie, how are you?
I'm good, bud.
Long you know, I was going to say, I got a special introduction for you, and I almost did it tonight, but I'm going to save it. I'm not even going to tell you what it was. I was guaranteed to ruin it because I didn't use it tonight, but I thought, I can use it another night, so I'll save it.
Oh, boy. Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
You'll like it. It's not bad. You'll get a kick out of it.
Okay. Yeah, everything's good here. Getting ready for the big day tomorrow. It's been a busy day at work. So, ready to sit back and talk about some Pirate football.
Yeah, no doubt. And to do that, we are joined by a former East Carolina quarterback in the 2010 and 2011 seasons. Wish we had him longer. Wish we had him right now.
Yeah.
Welcome in, Dominique Davis. Dom, thanks for joining us.
Man, thanks for having me, fellas. Appreciate it.
No doubt. So, Dom, we were talking before the show, you know, your path to East Carolina is interesting, and most people don't, but there are some listeners out there that may not. So talk about coming out of high school, being recruited, and who recruited you and why you originally went to Boston College.
Well, first off, Boston College wasn't even on my radar. I was getting recruited by other schools and smaller conferences and stuff. And, literally like a week before the last week of recruiting, these three guys walked in looking like the mafia, dressing all black. And I was at basketball practice, and as soon as basketball practice was over and they brought me into the coach's office, and literally, as soon as I sat down, Steve Logan, who was recruiting me out of Boston College, instantly got on the board. He didn't introduce himself, nothing. Soon as we sat down, he got on the board and just started drawing up plays. And literally, my jaw just dropped. And I was just, I was overwhelmingly, like, excited. Like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because no one's never talked to me like that before. So as soon as he finished talking and he asked me, did I have any other visits? I'm not going to name the school, but I did have another visit. And when I told him the school I was going to, he didn't say anything, but he just gave me a look. He just gave me a look like, you really going to go there over here? And as soon as he gave me that look, I called the school that I was going to visit and told him I wasn't coming no more. And I went to Boston College and committed on my visit.
So you go to BC, you're playing behind, oh my God, I can't remember his
Matt
name.
Matt Ryan.
Thank you. Oof.
Yep.
Playing behind Matt Ryan. Matt gets injured, your first or second year there, and you, if I remember correct, again, I'm going off memory, Dom, I did no research. You played an ACC championship game against Virginia Tech, or am I making that up?
I did. So what happened, I was behind Matt Ryan my true freshman year. And then it was the year after, because he got drafted.
Okay.
He got drafted by the Falcons. And then it was the year after. Now I'm a redshirt freshman. And we had another starting quarterback, Chris Crane. He was the one that got hurt. And I went in and finished that game. And then we had another game after that to clinch for the ACC title game. And we won. And, yeah, we played Virginia Tech in the ACC championship game my second year at BC.
And who'd you guys play in the bowl that year?
That year we played in the Music City Bowl versus Vanderbilt.
Did you start that game?
I started that game as well.
Okay. Did you guys win that bowl?
We did not.
Oh, sorry.
As a clock, because it was an ACC-SEC game, so as the clock was winding down, you could hear the whole crowd screaming, SEC,
oh,
SEC.
So, Coach, Coach Logan and staff, you know, leave BC. Was that your reason behind transferring out or what?
No. I got in some academic trouble, so I just decided to transfer, and it was just that timing where Logan left, and then literally like 6 months later, I transferred.
Okay, so you go to junior college. Talk about your recruitment process to come to East Carolina to play for Skip Holtz. And did Coach Logan have anything to do with that at all?
Okay, so when I first left Boston College, I got home, and me and my older brother, we started calling schools, and East Carolina was a school we called. They never answered or called us back, so I ended up going to a junior college, and then that's when East Carolina got a hold of me at the junior college. And it was Skip Holtz and Todd Finch. And, they brought me on a visit and literally committed on my visit. It was everything I dreamed of as far as, like, college football atmosphere. As soon as I got to the stadium, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm coming here.
And did Logan's pedigree from here have anything to do with you wanting to come here?
It did not. I haven't spoken to Logan ever since he left Boston College. So, he had nothing to do with my decision to go to East Carolina. It just so happened to be a coincidence that, yeah, he was a Pirate, and now I was getting ready to be one.
So, and then Skip leaves, goes to South Florida. Todd Finch goes with him. And we hire Ruffin McNeil, and mm-hmm. Lincoln Riley comes in. Obviously, I would imagine when you got to talk to Ruff for the first time, you had to love him. And then when Lincoln told you what you were going to be running, you probably said, yeah, I'm going to keep my commitment.
Well, so before I even could enroll into East Carolina for the winter semester, that's when Skip and all those guys left. And they wanted me to come to USF, but it just didn't feel right. So as soon as they hired Ruff, he called me like that night after he got hired, and then him and Lincoln came to my house the day after. So that when they basically you just got hired and you in my house the very next day, that showed me a lot. So that was set in stone for me that I was keeping my commitment.
Yeah, no, that's a big time by them. Very important. I'm sure they saw your tape and said, yeah, we got to make sure this kid keeps his commitment.
Yeah, and I saw like the school they came from Texas Tech. So I knew instantly, this was the same system I was in high school where you're doing nothing but throwing the ball, you're going to put up big numbers. So I was definitely excited. So I still wanted to keep my commitment. It was just a matter of if Ruffin and Lincoln still wanted me, and the fact that they came to my house the day after they got hired, that it was all said and done.
Yeah, and we're glad you came. And it's interesting. I remember now that you, in the past, we had you on one of our other shows, and you telling us that you had ran a similar offense in high school. I had forgotten that. So you come to East Carolina. You go through spring ball, fall camp, all that stuff. And, you know, game one, guess what we're going to jump right into it. That's kind of the reason I thought of you this week playing Tulsa. So game one, we play Tulsa, Golden Hurricane, Todd Graham's head coach at the time at Tulsa. It is a back-and-forth shootout. I'm sure every Pirate fan remembers that game.
Sunday afternoon,
Labor Day weekend, 2010. Yeah. And, you know, it comes down. And it had that feeling that it was going to come down to whoever has the ball last. That's what the game had that you know feel to it the whole game. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, here we go with the ball last. Talk about that last drive and leading up to that pass for the touchdown in the end zone to Justin Jones.
I'm sorry, I want to go back just a little bit. I didn't compete in spring football when I got there. I wasn't even enrolled yet. I was just out there
watching.
Just,
okay.
Just watching. Yeah.
So you know, I remember that now too. That you say that.
My first days were summer workouts.
But how valuable was it being able to watch spring ball? Just you couldn't participate, but I would imagine just you could stay. So you could stand there and just watch everything. You could learn the play calls, learn the system. You just couldn't participate.
That's it. I couldn't be in meetings or anything. I could only literally just go out there and watch practice and just learn on the run. Just hear what coach is saying out loud and hear what the quarterbacks like cadence and reads and all that stuff. I was just out there just being a sponge, really.
Was Lincoln yelling at a megaphone every to make sure you heard it?
Nah, I'm old now, so that's new school now. That's what all the coaches doing with the microphone and everything.
I'm just saying that way so you could hear him. You know, you could just watch. I was, you know.
Lincoln's a very vocal person. He didn't need a microphone for you to hear him anywhere on the field. So.
Gotcha. Okay, so you watch spring practice and you take part in fall camp, and fall camp you solidified yourself as a starter. So we'll talk a little bit more about going into that Tulsa game before we get to that last drive in the Hail Mary. How confident you got to come out and do what you guys did on offense in game one?
Yeesh.
Is very rare. So how confident were you as a quarterback in that offense, in yourself and in your teammates going into that first game? Did you guys know you could be, did you know you could, that y'all were going to be that good on offense immediately?
Honestly, I did not know we was going to be that good on offense the very first week. Honestly, because even I threw my first touchdown pass to Lance Lewis. Lewis wasn't there all summer camp. He got there 3 days before our first game. 3 days before our first game and started. And you saw what he did. So it was still like, we don't know, but we know we got the guys. We just don't know how it's going to turn out. But literally, from the very first play, it was like, oh, yeah, we're going to be pretty good on offense.
And as I said, back and forth all day. So now, if you will, take us back to that last drive leading up to the winning touchdown and that play itself, your Hail Mary to Justin Jones.
Fourth down, it seemed like, the game was over, basically. You see the fans leaving. You just – like the energy is just gone, like game over. But I mean, that's something that Hail Mary is something we don't practice it every day, but that's something you run in practice just in case, because you gotta practice the worst case scenarios. So that was a play where we used to run it in practice, and we was like, yeah, we gonna complete one of these one day, 1 week, but we didn't know it was gonna be the first week of the season. So falling, leading up to that play on the sideline, just talking about it, I mean, wasn't nobody panicked or anything. Everybody just was status quo and just, let's go out here and execute it. And I just took the snap and scrambled to my left a little bit and just threw it up nice and high so the guys can get down there and get in the end zone. And, yeah, it's tough to when a 6'8 guy is jumping and he's got the longest arms ever. It's hard when, yeah, he's already catching the ball before you can even jump.
Yeah, and it wasn't great coverage either. You guys complete the pass. The crowd goes crazy. You guys, everybody's piling on everybody in the end zone. They have to review the play, which there was absolutely no need to review that play. But I remember that because it delayed the celebration just for a moment because you just thought, oh, no, somehow. So you win it. What was the atmosphere like in the locker room after that game?
I think the atmosphere in the locker room was greater than the atmosphere on the field after the game. It was just like a wow, oh my gosh moment. Like, did that just really happen? And just the whole emotion of the game. Like you said, we was going back and forth the whole game. So emotions are high. Just everything is just on like 1,000. So getting to the locker room after the game was like one of the best feelings ever, because like we're talking about, we didn't expect to be that good on offense that quick. And once we saw, like, because we knew how smart Lincoln was and how we practiced, we knew it was going to be a really good offense. But, man, we got to figure out we was going to be really good the very first week.
Yeah, we're going to dive into a few more games from the 2010 and 2011 season. Hey,
before we go any further, can you imagine, Kyle, now?
Sure.
They had total offense that day for ECU, 538 yards of total offense.
Yeah, I take it. I'd be happy with 400 yards of offense. I'd be tickled pink.
It might take three games to get that.
No kidding. Our offense is horrible. But we'll get into that a little bit more, as much as Dom wants to, a little bit later. But you mentioned Lincoln, Dom, and how you knew how intelligent he was. How impressed were you with Lincoln? He wasn't much older than you. He still ain't much older than you. So what was it like when you did it even enter your mind how young you was? This guy's 27 years old and he's my offensive coordinator, or did that even cross your mind?
It didn't even cross my mind. So because when I got there in spring and I just saw how he operated, he was 26, but he didn't act like 26. He was
all business.
Very so, and
he probably had to be more so with that age to make sure the players respected him.
I mean, yeah, like he has a perfect balance to where he can put his arm around your shoulder and he can lay it in you. So it's a very, very good balance to where when he does get on you, you can take it in a good way because you know it's coming from a good place.
Right. In this year, 7-5, I believe it's 7-4. They got 7 wins, I think, USC. Am I right, but Stevie?
Yeah, I think they said.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of people, spent a lot more out of Lincoln. I saw Paul Feinbaum call him a farce, saying he needed to resign at USC. Of course, Paul Feinbaum has got a face for radio, and somebody decided to put his big-ass ears on TV. But what are your thoughts on that? Because I'm a big believer in Lincoln Riley. I do think he's got to figure it out defensively at some point, get the right defensive coordinator. But as far as offense goes, if anybody thinks Lincoln Riley is a farce, they're complete morons. And in my opinion, Paul Feinbaum is. So any thoughts on the criticism he's taken this year?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair because Lincoln's resume and the guys he's put in the league, it's not fair at all. It's especially when we're talking about the offense. It's not fair at all. But it's just every coach. I mean, you got guys like Nick Saban who's winning 10, 11, 12 games a year and is, in it to win it every year. You don't get that every year from everybody. Like, that's rare. And Lincoln's been there every year. It's just this one year where it's not looking as good. Like,
and it's year two at USC. He's not in year four.
Right, right. And as far as the defense, I mean, yeah, like most of the teams he's coached, like the defense has been an issue, but the way he runs his offense, sometimes the defense don't have time to rest because the offense will go out there and score in 2 or 3 plays after the defense just got off the field on a 8 to 10 play drive. Now they back on the field and didn't get no rest. So now it's like, yeah, the defense legs are tired or whatever. So now it's looking like the defense isn't doing that well, but sometimes it's because the offense is doing so damn great.
Yeah.
You would think.
Parent too, though, back in the day. I don't know how much you followed the NFL, but if you remember the old San Diego Chargers, Air Coryell, Dan Fouts, this is showing my age. Dan Fouts, Kellen Winslow, Charlie Jamorno, John Jefferson, they had this wide open offense, but they could score 45 points, but they'd end up losing 48-45. They never had the defense. So that could be, this is what Lincoln Riley's offense reminds me of, is that Eric Coryell. And just like you said, you leave that deep, you don't give the defense a break. It does make the defense look like they're a lot worse than they are.
Yeah, and that's why most of their games are very high scoring games.
Yeah.
Like, offense don't have a problem scoring at all. It's just the fact they score so much so fast, sometimes it's not giving the defense a chance to sit down and take a deep breath and and see what's going on.
Yeah, I don't even know what kind of defense USC is running this year. Honestly, I haven't watched them enough to comment on it intelligently. But theoretically, I think most people think in that kind of offense, the best thing to do is run an aggressive defense because, you know, they can force some turnovers, get the offense the ball back, you know, get off the field fast that way. Interestingly enough, if everybody remembers, the most success East Carolina had when Lincoln was here as OC and Ruffin as head coach was 13-14, and Rick Smith was defensive coordinator, and he ran a zone defense. We didn't blitz a lot. We were very gap sound, and what we did was always play good zone coverage and force a lot of interceptions and make teams kind of drive the ball on us, which you kind of wouldn't think would be the path to take with that offense. It doesn't seem very complimentary to that offense, but it worked really well here. So I don't know if that's something Lincoln might want to think about or what kind of defense they're running now, but Lincoln's much smarter than I am. He'll figure it out with who's the right defense coordinator for him.
And then it's a whole, like, a recruiting thing, too. Because when it comes to recruiting, Lincoln's looking for offense guys.
He's
looking for receivers and guys who can take the top off the defense and all that, who can make plays when the ball's in their hands and all that good stuff. So, and I'm not saying he's not recruiting defense, but I think his main focus is offense over defense, and that's how he recruits.
No, I mean, he's made a really good point in regards to this year's Pirate football team in reverse, where Mike Houston is all about the defense. And if you look, we're pretty talented on defense, but our offense is trash. And I really think a big portion of that goes back to neglect and recruiting on that side of the ball. I know that's not the point you were trying to make, but it in reverse is relevant to this year's East Carolina team. So I want to talk about some more games from your career, if you don't mind. We'll fast forward a little bit to the 2010 season. To Steve, if there's a game I miss that you want to ask him about, jump in. But I'm going to fast forward a little bit to the 2010 season to NC State in Greenville.
Yeah.
You know, they had I shouldn't have took a nap earlier, Stevie. My brain ain't working. I really cannot. Hold on. Wait a minute. Russell Wilson. Thank you.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. I'm getting ready to save you, but you got.
And Russell Wilson, obviously. Everybody knows how highly touted he was. You outperformed him that day. No question about it. Let me ask you that first. When you're playing a Russell Wilson as a competitor, you ain't going to play one-on-one against him because you're on offense. He's on offense.
Right.
But does it get you amped up? Like, Russell Wilson, this kid's all ACC, all everything. I'm going to go outperform him today. Does that cross your mind, or are you just focused on winning the game?
Honestly, it didn't cross my mind. What crossed my mind the most was when I first committed to East Carolina and I was getting a lot of messages from fans, and most of the messages were, make sure you beat NC State. Make sure you beat NC State. So that was the main thing that was crossing my mind was, yeah, this is a very big game for our fans. So I was more amped up because how the fans reacted to NC State more than Russell Wilson being there and I got to outperform him.
Well, it sounds like Ruffin didn't even have to get it across to you guys. You knew it from the fans. But Ruffin playing here, how much did he – made sure everybody knew how important this game was to the fan base?
He made sure it was important, but he made sure that it wasn't like the biggest game of the year. We still got to treat this game like a regular game. We can't treat it like the biggest game of our lives, because
you got to play next week.
That and also that's when you can kind of go out there and make mistakes, because you're trying to go out there and be perfect, and you're not playing as fast as you want because you don't want to mess up, because it's such a big game and you don't want to be that guy to mess up. So he didn't really make it like the biggest game of the year, but he definitely made it known that this is a game where the fans want to win.
You guys jump out on NC State. We take a big lead. State makes a comeback. Sends it to overtime. You get it in the end zone in overtime. We missed the friggin' extra point. Not everybody in the stadium, their breath just left their body. They knew we were going to lose that game because NC State was going to make their extra point. So you had to keep them out of the end zone. And Damon Magazoo with the pick in the end zone. You were sitting on the bench, obviously. What was your reaction when Damon made that pick in the end zone against State?
Thank God. Thank God. That's exactly what I said. Thank God. Thank God. Because honestly, like, it didn't feel like we was going to lose that game, the whole game. So I wasn't, even when we missed that extra point, like, I still, nobody on the sideline was concerned or anything, because it just felt like this was our game to win, even though they came back and did all that good stuff. But we still felt like, yeah, we're going to win this game no matter what.
I mean, listen to the stat line, 37 for 53, 69.8 completion percentage, 376 yards, 2 TDs, no interceptions. I think I would take that as wouldn't you, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. God, yeah, please. Any day, yeah.
Yeah, I felt good that game because
you definitely
I started off the game like 15 for 15.
Yeah, you're red hot, and we'll talk about another game in a minute where you're even hotter than that. But you lit it up that day. Great win as a Pirate fan. Just speaking to it as a, you know, not a media member, just from a fan standpoint, being there in that stadium that day. It was my birthday or my birthday weekend. I don't remember exactly.
That was actually my birthday that day. It was October 16th.
Okay, so it was 3 days after my birthday. So, and it was on Stevie's birthday, oddly enough. So it was just a great day. Just the weather was perfect. You beat NC State. I mean, just what a great memory. What a great day. I wish, you know, our students could experience something like that this year. Of course, they won't. But great times at Dottie Ficklin. Steve, is there anything else you want to ask him about the 2010 season?
You covered the 2010 season.
Yeah, so we the game in the 2010 season, Dom, that I think most Pirates would like to forget. That's Navy. I'm not even going to talk about that game unless you want to.
Go ahead, man. This your show. You go ahead.
Okay, because it leads into the 2011 game. So the 2010 game against Navy, utter disaster. Not really much on the offense's fault. You know, though, you guys could score 101. Defense could not stop the triple option. What was the atmosphere on the sideline in that game when it fell apart in the second half? And it was just mind-boggling how that game got out of hand so bad.
It honestly felt like Navy was about to score 100 points.
I thought they were.
That's how it felt. That's what I was saying to myself on the sideline. Like, these boys might score 100 points. Because, like, they were scoring on offense, but everything was going right for us on offense for us. But everything was going wrong for us, too, on offense. Like, we had a fumble for a scoop and score touchdown, and then I tried to throw a pass. The defensive end tips it, and I catch it and tried to run, and they knock it out my hand, and they scoop and score it for a touchdown. It was just when it rains, it pours.
Yeah. Did you guys start pressing when you saw the defense struggling that bad?
Yeah, I think that's when we started. We had our couple turnovers, but other than that, we was, it felt like we was unstoppable out there on offense.
Yeah. Just unfortunately, go ahead.
It was 48 points in the second half.
Yeah, I know. I was there. It was horrible. It was horrible. So following year, you guys go up to Annapolis, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And, take on the – it's one of only two wins. We still only have two wins over Navy. When you go up to Annapolis, and you are in the first half of that game. How many balls did you complete in a row?
26 in a row.
At the time, that was the NCAA record, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, 26 pass completions in a row. Did that have anything to do with what happened the year before, or did you just happen to be locked in that game?
Just one of those days where I was just in the zone. I was just in the zone. And actually, I think I got in my zone the week before. because we played Memphis and I finished the game like 10 for 10. And then went into the next game 26 for 26. So it was just one of those days. I didn't do anything differently. Nothing. It was just one of those days where everything was going right for us.
Yeah, and you were red hot in the first half. Second half, Navy makes a comeback.
Yeah, second half, our first play of the game, we throw it in incomplete.
Yeah, and Navy, you know, starts their comeback and drives it down the end of the game and has a chance to were they going to tie it with a field goal or win it with a field goal?
Okay. It was going to tie it, yeah.
Okay, so what was your, just again, reaction on the sideline? You're standing there watching them miss that field goal. Was it, again, thank God?
Not this time. I had a feeling he was going to miss because it was kind of a – I think it was kind of a far field goal because I think he was short maybe. But
I just remember it was no good.
Yeah, I knew he was going to miss that one. I wasn't even nervous or anything. I would have been shocked if he would have made it.
So you get the win over Navy, which to me was a huge win after what they had done to us the year before. Mm-hmm. It was good to atone for that loss and go to Annapolis and get the win. You guys, the Pirates were pretty good in 2011. You had some key injuries kind of late in the year, some games like UTEP you guys should have won. You should have been in a bowl that year. Mm-hmm. The team was definitely good enough to be a bowl team. But you come up short. What are some other games that stick out in your memory at your time at ECU for the 2010 and 2011 seasons?
I would definitely say when we played UAB in the 2010 season, that was the game where we win that game. We bowled up.
On a Thursday night. I remember that game.
Yep. And I ended up getting hurt that game. I hurt my shoulder. And they took me back to the locker room and examined me and everything and said I could still play. So I went back out there and threw three touchdowns and ran two touchdowns. So that was a game that definitely sticks out for me because my shoulder, Lincoln still calling QB runs, and I just wanted to tell him, please stop calling QB runs because my shoulder is killing me. But he was calling them at perfect time where I wasn't getting touched and I'm walking in the end zone.
Nice.
That's another game that stuck out for me. And I hate bringing up losses, but we played Marshall in 2011 in Marshall.
For bowl eligibility. Yeah.
Overtimes. Yeah. That was a doozy too. Even though we lost that game there, that one stuck out too.
He has a great game. A terrible ending, but a great game. That makes me think the game before against UCF, that was a fun game to watch. Pirates won a close one on senior night in Dottie Ficklin for the opportunity to play for bowl eligibility. Anything stick out to you about that one?
Most of our, like you said, we got hit with the injury bug late in the season, and we didn't have any running backs on the team, so I had to do all the running. So, that game stuck out a lot because I was dog tired after that one. Because, damn, I didn't. Lincoln calls maybe four or five runs for me that game. I had quite a few, I believe. And just to win that game, my last game at Dowdy, and the fans, you know, wishing me the farewell as I was walking off the field. That game sticks with me too.
No doubt. No, it was a great game, and unfortunately came up short in that Marshall game. But I look back at that season. While it was a losing season, it was an enjoyable season. It was a fun season. Talk about Ruffin. I loved Ruffin when he was fired. I'm one of the guys that was kind of behind getting Jeff Confer out of here. We worked feverishly at it after Ruffin was disrespected like that. Talk about playing for Ruffin, what he was like as a man behind the scenes. Was he everything he portrayed? You know, I've had personal interactions with Ruffin. He's came across as everything he's portrayed to be in the media. I know towards the end, there was a lot of rumors that he was, you know, letting players come late to practice, depending on who they were, and running sloppy practices. Did you see any of that when you were here? My guess is no, or we would not have had the success we had.
Absolutely, positively not. No, because was this the time when was Lincoln still there or not?
He was. He wasn't the last year, but 15. But you had Dave Nichol as OC. It was the same damn staff minus Ruffin. Minus Lincoln and Brandon.
I was about to say I know Lincoln's not letting that fly. Guys coming to practice late, so I can't speak on that. But my personal experience, you're not coming to practice late for any type of reason with Lincoln. That he's not playing that because he was a guy. If you wasn't doing the things in the classroom, you wasn't going to play on the field. So why would he play you if you coming to late to practice for any reason?
Right. So you didn't experience Ruffin himself. You good leader, good organization skills. I mean, what was dealing with him like?
Oh man, he was like everything is advertised. Like he loved his players, and that's as a player, that's what you want from your coach. You want a coach who, one, believes in you, and two, who's gonna see you not only as a football player, but as a student, as a son, as a father. If they had kids, he sees you more than just a football player, and that went a long way with me and a lot of guys. And it's easy to play for a guy who treats you like that.
Yeah, exactly, and that's kind of what I always got from Ruff, and I didn't, you know, I thought it was a bunch of political BS when he was fired, and never heard any of his players verify any of the things that were said negatively. Just you know, positive. And you know, I hate to see him at NC State now, but I'm glad he's still in coaching, and hopefully one day in some kind of capacity, an administrative capacity, maybe out to run the Pirate Club, Stevie. I could see Ruffin doing a good job doing that.
Yeah, that would
I'm happy for him, but that's wild. Yeah, NC State, that's wild.
Well, you know, it had a lot to do with his father being sick, and he wanted to be back in that area and kind of had to take a job where he could get a job. But yeah. I don't blame him. You know what? I don't blame him at all. We fired him. So to me, at that point, he doesn't owe us anything.
Yeah. I mean, love Ruff, but when it comes to East Carolina, I'm sorry, Ruff, but you on that side.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on game day. I'm with you 100%.
I tell you, the NC State fans I talked to, they all love him. And, I mean, you know, they sure don't want to lose him. But
yeah, I mean, everywhere you go, if you bring up Ruff McNeil, everywhere he's been, everybody's literally going to
– it's positive.
Exactly. Like, nothing negative. If you got something negative to say about Ruff, that's something personal, like, with you inside.
Exactly.
He doesn't come off or – give anybody a reason to not like him.
And I think Jeff Comfer found that out after he fired him. I've never seen a bigger backlash in my life from a fan base as there was towards that man after Ruffin was fired. And really, it's at our athletic program back years. That the firing him started the process of a huge division in the fan base where you had the fans that were just support the university. And then you had the fans that were like me that said, no, this is wrong. We're going to make sure Jeff Comfer and these clowns, Shelly Benninger, and the rest of that ilk that got their fired up, we're going to make sure they get out of here. They fired one of us for no reason. And, you know, it may have caused a lot of damage to the program, but I and a lot of other people were going to do everything in our power to make sure Jeff Comfer suffered the same fate Ruffin did.
Yep.
So after you play for the Pirates, you end up going to the league with the Falcons. Talk about that. Talk about playing in the NFL.
Reunited with Matt Ryan again.
Oddly enough, yeah.
First thing I said when I signed with Atlanta, I was like, oh, wow, I'm back with Matt Ryan. But my whole rookie year, man, I was starstruck. Literally starstruck because I'm with guys who – I watch on TV all the time. You got Roddy White, Julio Jones, Tony Gonzalez, Sean Witherspoon, Jonathan Abraham, like all these great players. So I'm like on cloud nine every day. Like, wow, I'm around all these guys every day. And we went to the NFC Championship my rookie year and lost to the Niners. And literally, like, I thought we was going to win because we was up like 10 points at half. So I'm in the locker room at halftime like, oh, shit, we're going to the Super Bowl. We really going to the Super Bowl. And it just went the other way second half.
So how many years did you play in the league, Nam?
2 years.
Okay. I thought it was longer.
Two full years. And then I spent a few weeks on a practice squad with, like, the Colts.
Okay.
In camp with the Titans.
Did you do, I can't remember, forgive me, did you do any CFL after that or not?
I did. After I was with the Colts, I came straight to the CFL and been up here ever since.
Oh, are you still playing?
Yes, sir.
Holy crap. I really should have done some research. I'm good with recall. You can see, Stevie, I'm good with the recall. All this I remember from his East Carolina career. But I had no idea you were still playing in the CFL. I am so sorry. Forgive my ignorance.
Yep, just finished my ninth season in the CFL.
Good God Almighty.
British Columbia. Yep, came up short, lost in the Western Final. And
talk a little bit about the difference between I remember back, I'm from a very, very small town. We actually got one of those huge satellites 1 year, and we were able to watch CFL football.
C-band, Stevie.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yep. Talk a little bit about that adjustment to that game, because there's a little bit different rules, especially on offense in the CFL.
Yeah, the rules are different, and like you got to get adjusted to the size of the field, because the field is a lot wider. Yeah, and it's longer, like a few yards longer, like 20 yards, like 20 yards longer. So, it took me a whole year to get adjusted to the CFL. But after that, man, it's a great place to be as far as quarterbacks, because it's a quarterback driven league, and we throw the ball a lot up here.
Nine years in the CFL after three seasons in the NFL. That is a 12-year career, and you're still, it doesn't sound like you're retiring. I mean, that is phenomenal. I did not realize you were still playing in the league and still having success. I don't follow CFL football. I need to. I know there's a lot of Pirates playing.
We got Tyler Snead. Tyler Snead, who just won the Grey Cup.
Yep.
You got Justin Hardy, who just made the All-Pro team, basically.
See there?
You got Stanley Bryant, who's been the best offensive lineman in the league for the past 6 years. You got Jordan Williams, who just won a Grey Cup last year with Toronto.
Is Emmanuel Davis still playing up there?
No, he retired. As a matter of fact, he retired in 2018 after he won the Grey Cup.
Okay.
And then Mikael Brooks, he was up here for a little bit. Yeah,
wow.
Pirates, it's a lot of Pirates in the CFL now.
Yeah, and one of the greatest, up there, I don't know if they talk about the lineage of the league very much, but one of the biggest stars in CFL history was a guy named Henry Gizmo Williams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and he was a Pirate.
Really?
You didn't realize that, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes, he was on the 83.
Oh, my gosh.
You ever hear people talk about that 83 team at East Carolina?
Yeah.
One of the greatest teams in East Carolina history, the 83 team, went 8-3, lost to Florida, Miami, and Florida State by a combined 10 points. That was Henry Gizmo Williams was running back there.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
And he was known for doing flips.
Also had Marcus Crandall, too.
Yeah, Marcus played here in the 90s under Logan, and obviously he was a big star in the CFL.
Yep.
And, Henry Williams, Gizmo. So a lot of lineage. Go ahead, Stevie.
Justin Butts making some comments up here. We kind of missed a little bit. My bad. Talking about he missed Dom being at ECU, and he was the man when Justin was in Greenville. He said Dom was the man, and he wants to know. I don't know. You'll probably get into this a little bit, Kyle. I don't know if you're through talking about stuff. What does Dom think about the state of the program at ECU now? Mm. How much you want to get into it? That's up to you.
Man, it's not looking good right now. But we did lose a lot of starters last year. Like,
most of
our guys who were the stars are gone, and those guys got plenty of experience throughout their careers at East Carolina. So now it's a shift. So it happens with a lot of teams, the majority of the teams. Once when all your seniors and your upperclassmen are going, you got to start all over. Now you're starting with young guys, and it's going to take some time. So right now we in a time right now where we just making a shift right now, and it's just a rocky one. It's just a rocky situation. But I feel like once when the guys who we have now get that experience, and come next year and the year after, we'll be right back to where we should be.
The one issue is quarterback. Neither one of these two kids are going to be the starting quarterback next year. You have Flynn's going to go to medical school. Garcia is not showing the ability he can play quarterback at this level. So going to have to hit the portal for quarterback. Donnie Kirkpatrick, that was announced Sunday by Coach Houston, mm-hmm. that this will be Donnie Kirkpatrick's last game as OC. So going to be making a change at OC. I don't know how much you've watched East Carolina the last couple of years. I firmly and I believe we need a philosophy change on offense. I don't know that Coach Houston would ever go full on Lincoln Riley style offense, but I think for East Carolina to succeed at the highest level, meaning winning 7 or 8 games, getting back to, you know, as we were towards the end of Ruffin and Lincoln being here, winning 10 games a year, I really think we're going to have to go more wide open on offense. I think that just works better here.
I believe so too. And I love Coach K. Coach K was the receivers coach when I was at East Carolina, and I love Coach K. And that's a tough situation. You know, he's not the first coach to get fired and won't be the last.
So, let me ask you a question, and I don't know how much you're going to really know the answer to this, but just tell me your gut. Knowing Donnie Kirkpatrick playing, you know, he wasn't your direct coach, but he was inside receivers coach when you were here. Knowing his personality, the conservative nature on offense, run first, pass second. Do you think that's what Donnie wants to do by design, or do you think that's more what Coach Houston wants him to do?
I think it goes both ways. I think as a head coach, you let your staff do their thing, and then, like, of course, they just, you know, parted ways this past week.
He is coaching this last game. He's going to coach this also.
Okay. Right. But, yeah, once when things get, you know, the way they are now, I feel like that's when it's coach's turn to step in and put his input. But I don't know. I feel like as a coach, you need guys. And like you guys saying, it's not like Coach K has the guys at quarterback per se. So no.
Or the offensive line.
If you don't and O-line. So if you don't have those guys, it's hard to go out there and call certain plays when you know that you can't execute it. So you gotta call what the guys are what they know and what they can execute at a high level. And that's just how it is right now. We just don't have the guys right now to run certain stuff where we're going to see success.
No. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out the rest of the year. You know, I'm not 100. If we go get, you know, butt race by Tulsa, Houston may wind up with the same fate Donnie Kirkpatrick did. Who knows? But time will tell. We'll know after the game this Saturday in the coming weeks if we're going to be hiring an OC or if we're going to be hiring a head coach also.
I mean, see. I don't have a say-so, but I feel like a guy who they should – target is because I saw this, somebody said it the other day, is Joe Sloan. He's East Carolina Pirate through and through. He bleeds purple and gold. He knows.
For OC or where's he at now?
He's the quarterback coach at LSU.
I feel like he's come in and
be the OC and run a wide open offense to where things can look better for us on
our he was with Skip at Louisiana Tech.
He's a very intellectual guy. Like, he's very smart. He knows what he's doing. He just needs that opportunity. He just needs someone to give him the opportunity to show that he can be a great play caller.
You know, I don't know that Houston has the luxury to take a chance because of this season going to win two or three games. He's going to be on the hot seat next year. I do agree. Joe Sloan is a great offensive mind, good coach, and he is a Pirate. But I just don't know that Houston is going to give somebody who hasn't been an OC that opportunity. But yeah, great quarterbacks coach, and that is something we definitely need, is to develop quarterbacks.
Hey, Lincoln Riley wasn't an offensive coordinator.
Oh, I know, I know. Oh, and I'm not saying Joe Sloan couldn't do it, and I'm not saying it wouldn't be a good hire. I just wonder if Houston would take a chance on somebody that hadn't been an OC at this point.
Right, and my thing is, the way our season is now,
nothing to lose.
Like, what OC is going to be like, yeah, I'd love to come to East Carolina.
Yeah, I've thought about that too, Dom. I think you may end up having to hire somebody like Joe Sloan that's unproven as an OC. My guess, knowing Coach Houston, is he's going to probably go hire an FCS OC with having such a strong background in the FCS. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. I don't know how many OCs are going to leave FBS jobs to come here right now. So,
hey, Bubba, put that comment up you just made, Bubba, because it said word is he would only leave LSU to return to be head coach. Due to his situation at LSU, he's getting $600,000 as quarterback coach.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
well,
he ain't coming to East Carolina.
No, well, we could pay him similar as OC. We're paying Donnie $450,000, so we could pay him similar as OC. I just don't know, you know. We'll see, but so it'd be interesting to see who you know how that plays out. What other names come up? Dom, I'm glad to hear you still love the program. You're still a Pirate. You've been busy playing in the CFL. Have you had a chance to get back for a game since you graduated?
I have not. And matter of fact, I just finished my degree last year. I just graduated May 2022.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first time being back when I had to walk the stage. But
I didn't realize that. Congratulations on completing your degree.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm glad to hear you walked. This is a follow-up question to that. You just talked about walking. You know, you're a veteran quarterback in the CFL, and it's something that I ask a lot of former players. The university, the Alumni Association, and the Pirate Club, have they reached out to you?
They have not.
They have not, yeah. That doesn't surprise me. And I want everybody in Pirate Nation to hear that and remember that. They have not reached out to Dominic Davis.
And listen, I've tried to reach out to them, and I got nothing.
Wow.
You hear that, Ryan Robinson at the Pirate Club. I'll tell you what, you know, I can put you in touch with the Pirate Club rep that will be glad to talk to you. But it's a shame that the university – a guy who's a star in the CFL, a guy who played in the league, a guy who was, well, the short time he was here, you know, God knows the kind of records you would have set if you'd have been here 4 years. You know, the university just ignores him. That is an ongoing issue, and something that we've talked about ad nauseum on this show, that our university, particularly at the fundraising level, neglects a lot of people. And it's not just former players. It's a lot of people that go neglected, you know, that would give more money if they felt like they were appreciated more. And I don't know what we're doing. I don't understand why we do some of the things we do in those aspects. But, Pirate Club, you just heard it right here on the show. Somebody get this to Ryan Robinson or somebody over in the Pirate Club building. Dominic Davis wants to talk to y'all.
Man, so, we've, like, a lot of former players, because I still talk to some former players still today, and we always talk about the great times we've had at in Greenville, and how we just we always want to go back, but you know, guys got families, and I'm in Canada with my career, so it'd be hard to come back. But it would be nice if, you know, like you said, Pirate Club or anybody would reach out to more guys.
No, it only makes sense. It's only going to benefit the university. You know, to me, not only you guys, if you guys, you know, give money, give back to the university, donate. It's more money for the university. And to me, you get a Dominique Davis, I want to get you involved in the Pirate Club because I want you, hey, in the offseason, Dom, can you make some phone calls? Imagine a Pirate fan just sitting there and they get a phone call from the Pirate Club and it's Dominique Davis talking to them on behalf of the Pirate Club. Hey, look, we need this and that. What can you do? I mean, to me, that would be a lot more effective than sending out a letter.
Definitely.
I agree. And I'm offseason now, so I got plenty of time to do whatever for East Carolina.
There you go. Somebody get the Bubba, you know, make sure you get this audio over to John Gilbert and to Ryan Robinson at the Pirate Club, because this is something that we try to point out, and not in the negative way. We do it because we love the university and we love you guys, and Bubba said done. He's already got it over. He's making sure they hear this. And you know, it's ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous that they're not reaching out to you guys more. And
I will say this, I don't know how many people are listening, but as much as the fans love us, we love the fans just as much. Like, that's a thing we talk about, like, after leaving. Like, man, like, the stadium, it used to be a sellout crowd every home game, and the fans was rowdy and loud and rowdy-dowdy. Like, every home game, like, it was one of the best places to be. And even talking to other players who've played at East Carolina always say, man, like, East Carolina got one of the best stadiums I ever played in because the fans are so crazy. Like, yeah, that's Greenville for you.
No, we love Pirate football. We're very passionate about Pirate football. We want nothing more than for Pirate football to be successful at a very high level. And, you know, I think one of the things that happens here is a lot of our fans see us big time, and players like you see us as big time. And I think some of the current administration think we're we're just a group of five school, just another Assaran football team. And, it's not the case. I'm glad to hear the passion in your voice for the university and for the fan base. And the fan base feels the same about you and all the players that wear the purple and gold. You guys, to me, once you wear the purple and gold, you play here, you know, and sometimes the fans can be critical. It comes with the territory, but we love you, man. We love y'all. Just like, you know, I'm glad to hear that the players, you know, love the fans back. And yes, it's the way it should be.
Yeah, got another couple comments up here. We might want to reach out. Noah Collum, if I'm saying your last name wrong, I'm sorry, bud. Noah Collum says, "I remember doing my third grade project on the legendary Mr. Davis."
Oh wow.
Make you feel old, Dom? How old is he now?
Man, I already feel old. I got young guys on our team now who call me old every single day.
I bet you can still light it up. Third grade project on Dominique Davis. That's pretty cool.
That's what's up. I appreciate you, Noah. Man, I appreciate that. That's what's up. That's cool.
Noah now has three children and is 27 years old. No, I'm sure he's
24 now.
24, there you go. All right. I went too far off. But
I hope you got an A on that project, Noah.
yeah, no doubt. Stevie, do you have anything else you wanted to – oh, yeah, we'll talk about this. You're where are you at right now? Are you in Canada or are you in the States?
I actually just got home in the States yesterday for Thanksgiving.
Okay, so you celebrate Thanksgiving. That's what I was about to ask you about. What are your Thanksgiving plans?
Just go see – all the family who's cooking and eat their food and say thank you and go to the next house.
Give me your favorite Thanksgiving dishes.
Fried turkey.
Yeah.
And of course, dressing, or some people call it stuffing. That's the two main things I go for.
Do you have a favorite Thanksgiving dessert?
Man, I get like killed for this every time I say it. I'm not a big Thanksgiving dessert person. I do not really like sweet potato pie, pumpkin pie. I don't do it.
There's other dessert. You can have chocolate pie. You can have apple pie. You can have a banana pudding.
I'm not a big pie person. I'm really not. Like, I like cake. I love cake.
So you'll see a lot of cake on Thanksgiving.
I can do the cake. Yeah, my mom, great.
Somebody baking the cake, I'm all game.
Okay, so somebody, maybe one of your family members, what's your favorite cake?
Oh, man. I got three. I like double chocolate.
All right.
I like red velvet.
I was going to guess red velvet for some reason.
And I like vanilla cake with chocolate icing.
Okay. All right. Yep. So what a Dom's family member. So he's going to Thanksgiving for tomorrow. Make that man a cake.
Oh, I'm pretty sure somebody has something.
I can't imagine
there'll be a Thanksgiving celebration without somebody having a cake there.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it's usually somebody bakes a cake every year, so we stay consistent.
Yeah, so, Justin Butts is saying he loved you as a student in Greenville when he was.
I appreciate you, Justin. That's what's up, man.
And there's a Justin and Jessica on their comment from YouTube saying, y'all better give me a shout out. I don't know if you know who Justin and Jessica is, Kyle.
I know my wife, Jessica, who's sitting right here. I have no idea who Justin and Jessica is that wants a shout out, but shout out.
I don't know if it's Justin Butts on Facebook and on YouTube at the same time, but yeah.
Okay, well, we'll definitely shout out Justin Butts, he and his family are, behind the hauler there, the Halls Equipment for East Carolina, and major donors to ECU. The Butts family gives an excess of $100,000 a year to the Pirate Club, and they're largely ignored by the Pirate Club also, Dom, so don't feel left out.
Justin, have you gone to pick up that offensive lineman we were talking about a few
there weeks? You go. Justin's talking about it right there on the screen.
Yeah.
Hey, man, shout out to Justin Butts, one of my biggest fans. He on here coming in. Hey, big donor. Big donor.
Yeah, him and the family really are. That's not BS. So that's to me again, Pirate Club really doesn't. I don't know what level you have to be for the Pirate Club to care about you.
I don't think there is a level.
You must have to be given $1 million a year. But anyway. Dom, we hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving, man. I know what Stevie's fixing to do.
Yeah, we got to do the 2-minute drill. I don't know if you've heard of this, Dominic, but 2-minute drill, some quick hitting questions we like to ask. You know, it can be about anything from sports to just pop culture, a little bit of everything. So just no wrong answers, just whatever comes to your head.
All right, let's do it.
Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Favorite music artist?
Oh, man. Right now, I say J. Cole.
Okay. Lake or beach?
Beach.
Turf or grass?
Grass, all day, every day, twice on Sunday.
I don't think we'll ever get nobody to say turf on that question. Favorite movie?
Friday.
Great pick.
Favorite TV show?
Oh, man. See,
this could be a whole day.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be current. So you can go back to something you like.
But see, TV shows is what I do. So, like, that's a question I get all the time. And I'd be like, but
all right, well, give us your
top
three.
Off the top of my head right now, I'm going to go with Power.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Hell no.
All right, going from that. Favorite food?
I would say I'm a pasta guy, so anything pasta, like chicken Alfredo, from chicken Alfredo all the way to spaghetti, I'm down. If it's pasta, I'm down.
Dom, I had lasagna for lunch and chicken parmesan and spaghetti for dinner.
That sounded delicious.
Yeah, it was.
Favorite place in when you were in Greenville to hang out?
Sup Dogs.
Oh, I hear you.
There you go.
Favorite sport to watch?
Do I have to choose football?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Basketball. Go Celtics.
Did you see that three last night from the Pirates?
Say what?
Did you see the shot last night from the East Carolina
basketball? I saw the half court shot.
Yeah, East Carolina basketball was the top story on the 11 o'clock Sports Center last night. I don't think that's ever happened before. May never happen again.
Hey, yeah. See, people rushing the court. It was amazing.
All right, toughest opponent you went up against could be a linebacker or a team, like an individual or a team.
I would say Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech has been giving me issues ever since I was at Boston College, and then it just carried over to East Carolina.
If you could be on any sports team in history, which team would it be?
It would be the I'm taking football out. I'm taking football out. It would be the 2008 Boston Celtics.
Wow, okay.
All right.
Who's your favorite Celtic of all time?
Paul Pierce.
Yeah, I read that on his bio that he talked Paul Pierce was his favorite athlete. All right, last but not least, your favorite moment while you were at ECU?
My very first game of my East Carolina career.
I figured that was going to be
versus Tulsa, that Hail Mary.
Yeah, it's hard to top that.
All right, I think he scored on that one.
Yeah, good answers.
Real good.
Not there's any
great moments, but that was the first one that came to the top of my head. Of course, but definitely that Hail Mary. First game, can't top
that. That's a good way to start off. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Great memory. And, something you can find on YouTube if you're a younger pirate, maybe haven't ever seen that. And it's hard to believe that has been 13 years ago
now.
Long time.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
So you got some young pirates who may have never seen that. Go watch it on YouTube. But Dom, is there anything else? Anywhere on social media that we can follow you? Any information you want to get out there before we let you get out of here and enjoy your Thanksgiving?
I got my Instagram, D_DavisQB6, and that's pretty much what I'd be on for the most part. But if anybody want to follow me or connect with me, hey, that's the perfect place to get in touch with me.
And I am going to ask you one more quick question that came to mind that I wanted to ask earlier, and then we'll let you get out of here. With the USFL and the XFL merging, I get the sense that the Canadian Football League is still the place to go if you can't be in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Do you think with the USFL and XFL merging that it'll eventually become the true number two league in America, or do you still think the CFL will always be the place to go if you're not going to be in the league?
See, technically, CFL isn't like the second best league in America because like it's Canada.
Right.
So, but I do think I don't think so, because when you think about the XFL and the USFL, like they start up and then they go and then it just ends, and then they do it all over again and then it ends, and then they just keep doing it. CFL, it's about to be the 111th season next season with no hiccups. So I feel like the CFL will always be the second biggest league,
right,
in next to the NFL, because it's so much uncertainty with the XFL and USFL, because you don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. And be interested to see. I don't know if you know this, Dom. You may remember it. You're old enough to remember it, but CFL tried to expand into America in the mid-90s. Had a couple of teams. And,
as a matter of fact,
it was when Rocket, when Ishmael came.
As a matter of fact, it was one year where an American team won the CFL.
I did not realize that.
Yep.
I'm curious if the CFL will ever try that again. My guess at some point is yes. But, that could be 20 years down the road. Who knows? But
The issue with the Canadian Football League is – endorsements and just money in general, because when it comes to NFL and CFL, it's night and day. It's night and day.
Do you do any do you do any Tim Horton commercials? That's the only bit I know in Canada. Tim Horton.
Nah, not yet, but they do get guys who do those commercials.
Yeah, it Tim Horton's Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme, if you had to choose between the three.
Oh, Krispy Kreme all day, every day.
A North Carolina donut. Okay.
Man, so, as soon as you see that hot light on, you gotta pull in.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Dom, we appreciate you joining us. Enjoy your Thanksgiving and the rest of your holiday season. And you're always welcome here on the Sports Objective. And we're gonna see if we can't make the Pirate Club reach out to you.
I appreciate it. And I had a great time on here. Whenever you guys want me on, if I'm available, I'll be there.
I appreciate it.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Yes, sir. You guys too.
All right. Thanks, Dom.
All right.
So, Stevie, that was Dominique Davis, from former East Carolina quarterback. And a great interview by Dom. Glad to hear his love. You can tell he truly loves East Carolina and the fan base. And
it's just a shame what he said about the Pirate Club, you know.
Doesn't surprise me. That's kind of why I asked him the question.
On my other podcast, when I've interviewed some ECU players before, and off the record, you know, not during the interview, we've talked about their relationship with ECU, and they're like, no, you know, nobody's ever contacts us.
Yeah, and the reason, and we've done it off the air some too, but the reason I want to start doing it on a regular basis is because that's how you're going to make it change.
Get your point across. Get it out there.
Exactly. And it's only to help the university. I mean, if you had Dominique Davis making phone calls right now, I mean, you think that might be more effective than a letter from John Gilbert about NIL? I mean, I'm just saying.
I would say so.
But anyway, teamboneyard.org, there it is on the screen. If you want to give the NIL, Stevie, you can join for as little as $10 a month. That's a combo at Bojangles.
Look, you can't even buy freaking, a couple of cheeseburgers and fries and a drink at Burger King for that.
Not hardly. So join teamboneyard.org, team behind the team. Hey, look, and if you don't want to give the team Boneyard, maybe you don't like the Hintons, whatever, you can go straight to the university, get in touch with the compliance officer for NIL at ECU. Bubba, if you can think of her name, if you will, type it on the screen. That's another way you can also give to NIL. Stevie, we're going to do a couple more things here. One, I want to talk about the basketball game. I was like, did you get to see that?
Yeah, there we go,
right on the screen.
Yeah.
Our compliance officer for NIL is Alex Kiddie, Keddie. Get in contact with them at ECU. I'm assuming, and this is just an assumption, so if it's the wrong email, I apologize. It is probably alexk@ecu.edu would be my guess, or akeddie@ecu.edu. Yeah, one of those two, probably akeddie@ecu.edu. And that is, again, Keddie. If you want to give that way instead of Team Boneyard.
You keep doing that. It makes me think. Yeah, it's making me think of the freaking UBE commercial back in the day.
What about it?
I was like UBE or DD, UBE for ECU.
Oh, UBE for ECU, University Bucks.
Yeah.
I remember it well. So did you get a chance to see the game last night?
I didn't see the game. I did see on SportsCenter this morning, though, when I woke up this morning, because, like I said, last 3 days for me have been like a blur. But looking on SportsCenter this morning and pleasantly surprised to see the last-second shot win the game for ECU on SportsCenter. Like you said,
it was the top story at the 11 o'clock SportsCenter on ESPN2 last night after the action.
And they actually got the name right, too.
Yeah, East Carolina didn't call us Eastern Carolina. So, big-time shot, half-court shot by Bobby Pettifer Jr. I about said Bobby Duncan Jr.
we're not the West Texas rednecks up here.
Exactly. Only me and you and maybe one other person knows who Bobby Duncan Jr. is. West Texas rednecks, that's right. But Bobby Pettifer Jr. And by the way, Hank Williams Jr., excuse me, David Allen Coe had a song called I'm Not Going to Call Hank Williams Jr. Jr. Anymore. And after last night, I don't think I'm going to call Bobby Pettifer Jr. anymore. big-time shot, mid-court, unbelievable moment. And what I like most about last night's game was the mentality. We had lost a couple games we really shouldn't against Northeastern with Brandon Johnson being out. And I really felt that team last night had it – they were not going to go 1-2 in their own tournament. They wanted to make sure they finished at 2-1. And Kennesaw was the best team on paper we had played this year, tournament team last year. and down by eight with about 3 minutes to go, come back, win it on the last second shot there from midcourt. I just love the mentality that those guys believed that they were supposed to win. To me, that bodes very well for the team going forward. That, you know, lots of times in the past, Pirate basketball didn't have that mentality. These guys believe they are supposed to win.
And that makes a big difference too, bud.
No, it really does. Yeah. So, big road test against George Mason Saturday. If we can win that one, to me, that'd be like getting one of those losses to Upstate or to Northeastern back, because I don't know how many people really expected us to beat George Mason on the road, first road game of the year. So, to me, if you can pull off the upset up against the Patriots, you're right where you need to be. So, but anyway, we're gonna jump into football a little bit and talk about the Tulsa game, the offensive coordinator situation. But before we do that, the reason everybody watched, Stevie.
Oh, yeah.
Top five. And tonight, I didn't even do a list. I'm going to just do it off the top of my head. Top five Thanksgiving foods. And since you have a list, I'm going to let you start it. And then we'll rotate. So, Stevie, you go ahead with your number five Thanksgiving food.
I'm going to start off with dessert. And it's a good old-fashioned, my mom's good old-fashioned homemade chocolate cake. I mean, homemade chocolate icing, and she makes the layers and everything. Yeah.
Oh, you should share that with Dom.
Yeah. And then look, the key is though with hers, and she always talks about how ugly it is because it's got a crack in it, but the crack in it, I mean, crack kills. Yeah, it does. But the crack in the cake, that is where you want to get, because the homemade icing seeps in there. And, oh my gosh.
So number five for you is your mama's homemade chocolate cake.
Yep. Crack kills, bud. Just remember
that. It does. I'm going to go, man, you got me thinking dessert too. And I'm going to go number five for me. I'm going to go combination, very traditional. Any kind of pumpkin or sweet potato pie would be number five for me. My wife's making a pumpkin cheesecake. So any kind of thing from that area would be number five for me.
Okay. I can deal with a little bit of pumpkin stuff, but not like everybody else can. I can handle it in
small doses.
Small doses, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Number four.
Number four is something I, as a kid, I thought was the grossest thing ever, just looking at it, because I thought somebody is actually cooking grass, good old-fashioned collards.
Oh, man, love collards.
Yes, and over the years, I've gotten rid of where I love some collards, especially if you got the right seasoning in with it. That makes it even that much better. But, yeah, collards is my number four.
You know, I don't really associate collards with Thanksgiving. We certainly do have them on Thanksgiving some years. Love collards, but number four for me, I'm going to go homemade mac and cheese. Love a good homemade baked mac and cheese. You can't beat it. In fact, it goes good with collards. Side of collards, side of mac and cheese, that's pretty damn good. So number four for me is going to be homemade, not out of no stinking box, mac and cheese.
All right, number three for me, and some people call it stuffing or whatever you call it, dressing.
Yeah,
that's stuffing or dressing for me. And that was something I didn't like. The only ones that as a kid I would eat was the, stovetop stuffing?
Yeah.
But, you know, as I've grown older, just like with collards, as I've grown older, you know, the dressing that you actually make is freaking awesome. And I'm really looking forward to it. I hope somebody got some good dressing tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm a big dressing fan also. I know tomorrow we will not have homemade dressing because my sister or my wife, neither one, make homemade dressing. So, unfortunately, we're going to be dealing with the stovetop tomorrow. But so I'm not going to put dressing on my list because I'm not going to get any good dressing.
I can still handle stovetop. But...
Yeah, but on Thanksgiving, you want that good cornbread dressing or maybe some oyster dressing and – we're going to get some old raggedy stovetop. But anyway, for my sister and my wife, I hope y'all, I know my wife listens. She's sitting here. She's going to tell me if you don't like one. You want to tell her how to make some damn dressing.
Yourself. That's probably what they're saying right now.
Exactly. So number three for me, you know, I'm going to go sweet potato casserole. Love a sweet potato casserole, pecans, marshmallows. nice and sweet, where the potatoes have been, sweet potatoes have been mashed down, where it borderlines on a dessert, where you're eating it as a side and you think, should I be eating this as a dessert? So number three, I'm going to go sweet potato casserole.
All right. Number two for me, and Dom said it earlier, turkey, I like the old-fashioned turkey, but give me a good old fried turkey too. And you know, my this is my nephew, and he's actually like maybe 5 or 6 years younger than me, but it would go to his house sometimes. He had a jalapeno injected turkey.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was freaking off the chain too. But any kind of turkey, the only thing about that freaking turkey is I like to eat so much of it, and you know it's got that chemical in it.
Trick the moon.
Yeah, automatically makes you sleepy, and I'm like, jeez. Yeah, that's what it does to me. But, yeah, I ate a lot of turkey over the holidays.
Yeah, number two, I'm sitting here trying to debate what I want to go number two.
It's one or two things, probably.
I think I'm going to go – I'm all over the place on this one. I should have made a list. I really should have. I think I'm going to go turkey. I think I'm just going to go straight up turkey. Any way you can have it. Whether it's fried, traditional, like we're going to have it tomorrow, just traditional oven roasted turkey. So got to have gravy. And what I always do with my turkey, Stevie, I'll put a little gravy on some, then I'll put a little cranberry sauce on some.
Oh, I got you.
So, number two is turkey.
Bubba, put that comment up. That Bubba's talking about your sweet potato casserole.
Yeah, he loves it.
Screw the marshmallows on top, brown sugar crusted topping with, and it is pecans. I call it pecans. What do you call it, Kyle?
Pecans, baby. We're from Northeastern North Carolina, Stevie. That's how we roll.
Bubba's talking about. He said pecans.
Yeah.
Pecans.
Yeah, it's pecan. I both, Bubba, both. You can do pecans and marshmallows on top. It doesn't have to be one or the other. But it is phenomenal. What's your number one, Stevie?
Number one is good old-fashioned country ham. Salty country ham. Make your blood pressure go up. I'm gonna freak some people out here. Because you guys, if you don't know me real well, I am a ketchup-loving fool. And the only ketchup is Heinz ketchup. But I actually dip my country ham with ketchup.
You know, I can see it. Never done it. Doesn't freak me out.
Awesome. It's freaking awesome, dude.
I can see it.
Ketchup makes almost everything taste better.
I don't almost. Know that. But
I said almost.
Yeah, I can think of several things I'd rather have without ketchup. But I do like ketchup. I'm a ketchup fan. My number one, and we're not having it tomorrow, but I love a chocolate pie. Chocolate silk pie, chocolate cream pie, chocolate meringue pie. Also, lemon meringue would get an honorable mention because my mama, God rest her soul, made a tremendous lemon meringue pie. So that would also be on my list. But chocolate pie is going to be my number one, and nobody's making one tomorrow that I'm aware of. So it's not too late if you're going to be at Thanksgiving tomorrow at my sister's to make a chocolate pie for me.
Bubba saying, I'm like Julian in Big Daddy, the movie, regarding ketchup.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. People think I'm weird for my ketchup stuff, but I'm picky about it.
Yeah, Jessica's cousin is like that. She's got a cousin that puts ketchup on everything.
Look, Heinz, look, don't even get me started. Hunt's, no.
Del Monte makes the best ketchup.
All right, we'll see y'all next week. And if Kyle will be by himself next week. So, yeah. No, it just worked out where, of course, being a Steelers fan like I am, when they started calling the field Heinz Field, I was like, yeah. And then they had a freaking, when they got in the red zone, I don't know if you ever saw it or not, Kyle, when the Steelers used to be, when they got in the red zone, there was a big ketchup bottle up there on the, or they had like near the scoreboard that would light up. It would turn red. But I was like, is that not just mint? And now they changed the name to some freaking Acrisure. in Short Stadium. Should have kept it Heinz Field.
Well, I'm sure that whoever gave them the most money. But
I'm sure.
Any honorable mentions for your Thanksgiving foods?
Oh, let me see if I now there's a dessert one of my cousins make. It's like a chocolate eclair.
Oh yeah, yes, not a chocolate eclair like a donut, but the chocolate eclair like it's like chocolate.
It's almost like a version of banana pudding, but it's chocolate.
Yes, I love those. I've not had them in years.
I could take a shovel and just start putting that in.
That goes right up there with the chocolate pie. That to me falls in that same category. Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, tell your cousin to hook a brother up.
What about you ever had garden pea casserole?
Have not. I would be open to try
it. Fried onions on the top.
Well, that's like sounds like green bean casserole, except
green with garden peas. See, they call it you can use garden peas or the string bean casserole.
Oh, we do it with green beans all the time.
I have had the string bean, but it, you know, either way, that's one of my favorites.
We'll be having it tomorrow. My sister's making it, so we will be having green bean casserole tomorrow. Yeah, you can put those crunchy French fried onions on top of a Buick and want to eat it. So I mean, it's you know they kind of make it. That would be one of my honorable mentions. Also, would be the green bean casserole. I could go on and on about desserts, but I won't do that. My wife makes pecan pie. Everybody loves my wife's pecan pie. I can take it or leave it, and it's so funny because she makes it, and it's like her specialty, and everybody raves about how good it is, and I'm like, it's just so-so.
Oh, wow.
But what she knows it's just, I'm not a huge, I love chocolate pecan pie. And it's a traditional pecan pie with the Cairo syrup. It's just my wife seems to make it perfect every time. And I'm just, to me, it's just sweet. It's just sweet. There's no distinct flavor to it. So I can eat it. I don't mind it. But if I'm going to have a pecan pie, I'd much rather have a chocolate pecan pie.
Okay.
So you can tell I'm a pretty big fan of chocolate. So Stevie, Tulsa Golden Hurricanes this Saturday. New offensive coordinator coming down the pike. Potentially a new head coach, depending on how things play out this Saturday, despite what anybody says. Anybody come to mind to you for coaching candidates for the OC?
I mean, just what you guys have been talking about, but that the one that I had no idea. Judging from your reaction talking about Joe Sloan, that intrigues me right there, you know. But I don't think they'll be able to get him like
they, you know. I don't know that I would put that much money in a guy that's an unproven offensive coordinator. I think we could get him. I just don't know. You know, I don't know.
I want to see how
Seth Luttrell is somebody that really interests me. I don't know that. I don't even know that Houston knows Seth Luttrell from a box of rocks, but I that's somebody that really interests me. You know, there's a lot of good candidates out there. I'm going to take the time, hopefully over the weekend, to sit down and come up with a really, you know, good list of coaches I think we should consider for OC.
Well, the thing is, a lot of it depends on how this game goes Saturday, or whether we're just hiring an OC or maybe we're looking for something else too.
Yeah, depending on who you believe. I think it is entirely possible if we lose Saturday that we're looking for a head coach. And I am fully prepared for a head coaching. I'm fully prepared for a head coaching list. That list I have ready.
You think if it's a blowout and just a god awful game, kind of like we were on offense last week? You think we're looking a new head coach?
I think it's going to be hard to sell anybody on anything else. If we go out there and lose, say, 38-10, something like that, defense will play better than that. Let's say it's 24-0. I think it's going to be pretty hard to sell anybody on keeping Houston. I don't know who's going to buy season tickets at that point. My gut tells me we'll win this game. We'll find a way to win it. And we'll be hiring a new OC. That's my gut. Right. And look, I will not, as much as I've been vocal about, you know, saying that I would make a change to head coach, I will not be cheering against East Carolina this weekend. I'm not hoping for a loss. I do not have that ability in me to cheer against the Pirates, no matter if I want a coaching change or not. So I hope the Pirates win, which means we'll be looking for a new OC. And I hope Mike Houston is willing to have a philosophy change on offense, and whoever he hires as OC, I hope has the ability maybe to bring a quarterback with him, or has a good portal, you know, connection to get one in here. And I hope he gives him full control of the offense, turns the reins over, and don't hold him back, whoever it is.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that both the teams I pulled for, NFL and college football, fired their offensive coordinators this week. Matt Canada finally gone from Pittsburgh.
Should we hire Matt Canada?
No. Good gosh, no. Do not do that.
He was a good college coach.
He was okay.
He did really well when he was at the Pittsburgh Panthers, the 1 year he was OC there. But anyway.
That would be like a nightmare if I saw that come across the ring.
I wouldn't hate it, man. I wouldn't hate it, honestly.
I've dealt with it for the last, 4 or 5 years, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that's who I want, but I wouldn't hate it. So, all right, Stevie. Another show in the books. Football season kind of coming to an end for the Pirates after this week. We will still do shows. The Just Another Sports Podcast isn't going anywhere. We might not do it weekly. Me and Stevie are going to have to get on that. We might do it bi-weekly after football season. Depending on what there is to talk about. We will definitely have we got a comment from Justin Butts. Look up Josh Stepp.
University of Cincinnati tight ends coach.
Okay. I'll definitely look him up.
Hold on. Maybe that's an old one there. I don't know.
Let's see. Yeah, I wouldn't think you'd want the tight ends coach from Cincinnati to be our OC.
This is another one up here. He is offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach at Georgia State.
Oh, yeah. He's done a good job with their offense. That's not a bad pick. And he kind of runs kind of similar to what Houston likes to run. So it really wouldn't be a philosophy change. So that's an interesting mention there by somebody who's pretty well connected in Justin Butts. So,
Hey, Justin. Justin, if
you know something, wink once.
Justin had a comment earlier. I wasn't ignoring you, Justin, but we were in the middle of a conversation then and didn't have a right time to do it. Justin, you know, me and Justin fire back at each other because he's the Wayne Christian guy.
Yeah,
in the Northeast. Wayne Christian came up a little short in the championship game last week, Rocky Mount Academy topping them 38-32. Right? And Justin did bring that up. I did not bring that up. That was him.
You're not throwing shade.
No, I'm not throwing shade. But he was just he brought that up early. I wanted to acknowledge that comment earlier.
Well, good for you to acknowledge it. And hopefully you guys can renew that longstanding rivalry between Northeast Academy and Wayne Christian soon enough. Well, Stevie, enjoy your Thanksgiving tomorrow, man. Enjoy a day. How much time you got off? Just tomorrow?
Just tomorrow. And then I'll work Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
God bless you, man. I'm off till Monday. So I'm going to try to enjoy it. And I hope everybody else out there in Pirate Land does the same. I'm sure Sunday we will have a Pirate football playback, which will be the last one of the year. And we will probably get into really at that point talking about offensive coordinators. Me and Stevie will be back again. I don't know if we'll do this every week, but at least bi-weekly. I do, Stevie, we'll want to have a bowl preview with you. Right. So we'll be doing that soon. And, we'll talk hoops. We'll have to steer Stevie away from watching much ACC basketball this year. And,
I'm already headed in that direction where I'm watching more of the Pirates.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. So, all right. So, for Dominique Davis, Bubba Rosenbaum producing, Stevie Fly as my co-host, I am Kyle Barber. You have been watching and or listening to the Sports Objective, but just another sports podcast here on the Sports Objective Network. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.